Welcome into SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlandson is here with me. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Why are you still wearing those glasses?
My daughter was laughing on Monday. She says, all of my friends are going to come back to school tomorrow with like raccoon eyes because they've been wearing their eclipse glasses all day.
Yeah. So the eclipse, boy, it was a lot of fun this week. Lots of folks out to see that. For us in our area, it hit pretty close to when school let out. And so that made for some interesting scheduling as schools took students out to view the eclipse and then had to hustle them right back in and get them on school buses and send them home. So you guys had, and we also had clouds here in Middle Tennessee area that we had to dodge. And so you and your husband, you were daredevils in this.
We did.
This eclipse viewing.
We did. Last minute, we're eclipse chasers.
Yeah.
We decided. I said, I work remotely on Mondays anyway.
Yeah.
And so I said, listen, I can sit in the passenger seat and work and you drive and we'll try to get to totality because we're only about 2 hours away.
Yeah.
So we did it. It was very spur of the moment. It was exciting, but we did not make it because the traffic on Interstate 24 was terrible. Terrible.
But you guys were actually in Tennessee, right? You were coming up to Paducah, Kentucky, but you
That's
you were
right.
Still
we were
in Tennessee.
Trying to get over the state line into Paducah, but we didn't make it. We stopped in Clarksville.
At let's just make sure to get this in here, at the most primo location in Clarksville, Tennessee.
I'm telling you what, we could have charged admission.
So, Laura, you need to tell folks where you viewed the eclipse of 2024 in Clarksville, Tennessee.
At the Piggly Wiggly. At the Piggly Wiggly, right across the street from Fort Campbell, Clarksville, Tennessee.
Now, were they charging for parking into the Piggly Wiggly?
No, in fact, we were the only people in the parking lot that cared one thing about the eclipse. There was lots of people there, and they were pulling up, you know, past us to go and do their grocery shopping, you know, whatever. And they were probably looking at us like, "What are they doing?"
And so they didn't make you come in and buy a moon pie or anything like that.
No, I don't think the people in the store even knew we were there. We were kind of at the edge of the parking lot.
Yeah.
But it was great. We had a great time. And listen, we are in ball season, and so we had camping chairs in the back of the car.
There you go.
We didn't even plan for that. We just happened to have them in
just
there because we're at the ball field all the time. So we pulled those out, and we were like, let's watch the eclipse. And we did, and it was awesome. We got to, like, I would say 98% totality. It was really close.
It was very close.
We didn't quite make it all the way there. Mm-hmm. And we got out of the cloud cover because we were far enough outside of Middle Tennessee where it was so cloudy.
Yeah.
So it worked out great.
Absolutely.
And I love Piggly Wiggly. So
there you go. We'll talk to Jonathan about them picking up a sponsorship of SBC this week, something like that. Maybe we could just like announce the specials in the meat market for them or something, you know?
They have that pick five thing. It's pretty great.
That's right.
Pick five meats for $19.99.
I love it. There you go. All right. Well, so that's where we want to start, Laura. We had a story that is really kind of a team effort. Tobin Perry, who writes for us at Baptist Press and some other folks. Tobin's a fantastic writer. But he found a lead for us in Evansville, Indiana. And then we farmed that out to Scott Barkley, who wrote a story on what this church, Northwoods Church in Evansville, Indiana, was doing. They were in the path of totality and utilized the eclipse for an outreach event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of churches did. It was Tobin's story, of course, was great. But we also saw stories in several of our state outlets. The Arkansas Baptist News had a story about what some of the Arkansas churches did, and a BCM there at Arkansas State University, a BCM got really involved and had an outreach. And then the Texas Baptist Standard had a story in there about churches in Texas doing it. So I think, Southern Baptists took advantage of the eclipse and had outreach and had people on their campuses from all over the country.
Yeah.
Because people were just coming to town for the eclipse and were looking for an event to go to kind of watch it with other people and found themselves at a church. So
Scott's story has maybe one of the most Southern Baptist sentences that I've read in a long time. Here it is. Ready? I mean, this is it. This is, I mean, I personal experience from being a pastor, like this is it right here. Here it comes. Northwoods used its association's trailer right there, with block party supplies to set up snack options like cotton candy, popcorn, and snow cones to go with inflatables.
Nice.
Like right there. That's it. So summertime is a coming when you start
That's not,
hearing things
that's
like
so
that.
great.
But Sunday, Laura, that was a fantastic day for Southern Baptist as well as we celebrated Baptism Sunday.
Yeah, so the past 5 or 6 years, this has been on the SBC calendar every year. This year it was April 7th. I don't know that is it, does it always fall the Sunday after Easter?
I
I
think
think it
so.
does.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
think it's the
So it
Sunday after
changes every
Easter. That's
year.
right.
Yeah. So it's not
Yeah.
always the same Sunday every year.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the SBC calendar days are the same
Right.
Sunday every year, but this one moves around because it follows Easter.
Yeah.
So it was the Sunday, this past Sunday, which is the Sunday after Easter, Baptism Sunday, also known as Fill the Tank Sunday. And messengers added it to the calendar back in 2018 under the presidency of Steve Gaines, who was SBC president back then. And as we know, baptism numbers have been growing the past couple of years
Yeah,
as we're
praise
coming out
God.
of COVID. And so this is just another way to highlight that. It gives churches maybe an opportunity to talk about baptism that they wouldn't ordinarily have, and or just a way to encourage people who maybe have accepted Christ but haven't been baptized, or people that accept Christ on Palm Sunday or Easter to kind of have a big celebration coming out of that. So the story that we had in BP focused on several of those churches, one in Georgia. Pastor Matt Bartlett there at Lexington Baptist Church in Georgia, they've seen 50 baptisms in the past 3 years, and they had another one this past Sunday. Dean and Sarah, who's actually one of our executive committee members, he's at City Church in Tallahassee. They had 53 baptisms on Sunday. So really, really exciting. And then Jared Cornett in Birmingham, Alabama, at North Shelby Baptist Church, they also had 6 baptisms on Sunday, bringing a total of 23 for the past year there. So pretty exciting, exciting day.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So loved reading about that and hearing, seeing folks on social media post about baptisms happening in their church. So excited to celebrate that day and to share the importance of baptism. Laura, some business this week from the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. They have named Nathan A. Finn
Oh,
to
don't forget the
serve.
A. Yeah.
I won't. That stands for awesome, I'm sure. Nathan A.
Sure.
Finn to serve as senior fellow with an emphasis on matters related to religious liberty. So Nathan is a professor of faith and culture at North Greenville University in Tigersville, South Carolina. He also leads the Institute for Transformational Leadership there, and he is a bivocational teaching pastor at Taylor's First Baptist Church in Taylor's, South Carolina. He's got a church history, theology background. He's been in education for a long time, and so very devoted Southern Baptist and
Yeah, he's
very
been in
devoted
Southern
to.
Baptist service for a long
Absolutely.
time too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
served in a lot of ways. And I mean, he is just a well-versed Southern Baptist historian, cares about the things that Southern Baptists care about. So looking forward to reading what he produces from that fellowship with the ERLC. He joins, we just had this just a few weeks ago. He joins Rashawn Frost, who is focusing on human dignity issues, who is a brand new senior fellow there. And the veteran senior fellow is Jason Thacker, who is a
Yes.
former ERLC employee and now on board at Southern Seminary, but still is a senior fellow with the ERLC. And he writes on pro-life and other bioethical issues, but he also does a lot with technology and social
Yes, I was going to
media.
say he gets a lot of phone calls from Baptist Press reporters asking for comments on the various technological issues of the day, including
Well,
AI and other things.
and I Google his articles when I'm at a loss of what to do with these teenagers and their smartphones and try to get some help and wisdom there. So
Just throw them in the lake. That's what I want to do. Good
I
night.
don't know about that. So that's a lot of money to be going throwing in the lake. So
That's true.
even if they do get my phone that's 6 or 7 years old, So
Yeah.
anyway, all right. Another story in the public policy world came out this week, and it has roots in at the Land Center down at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, and it involves Dan Darling and Laura. It also connects Richard Land, who is the former president of the ERLC in there. And it is Ukraine focused.
They signed a letter along with some Ukrainian Baptists. So this is, like you say, another ERLC tie-in because Dan Darling, of course, used to work at ERLC, Richard Land, former president of ERLC. And April the 8th, they issued a letter to U.S. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. And as you might remember, Dan Darling is the director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Seminary. And of course, the center is named for Richard Land. So these two, they joined two Ukrainian, prominent Ukrainian Baptists, and sent this letter to Speaker Mike Johnson, saying the Russian government's decision to invade Ukraine and to target Baptists and other evangelical Christians in Ukraine has been a tragic hallmark of the war, and saying that basically Speaker Johnson has been put in Congress for such a time as this, and that he has an opportunity to help Ukrainian Christians, specifically Ukrainian Baptists, with the persecution essentially that they have been enduring in the wake of the Russian invasion. And also talked about what Southern Baptists specifically have done to help in Ukraine, because Send Relief has been there since the beginning, providing humanitarian aid and housing and bomb shelters and all kinds of assistance, and then helping the Ukrainian Baptist Convention and the Ukrainian seminary there establish these what they call We Care centers throughout Ukraine to house people, to allow children the opportunity to continue their education, to feed people, just all kinds of needs being met with the help of Southern Baptists. So hopefully that'll carry some weight. We'll see with the speaker.
Yeah, absolutely. So very interesting story there on that. Laura, this week, the IMB hosted what they call Missions College. Folks from 21 states gathered together, and they were a part of a intensive training that really... It was more than lectures, the article said, and the photos, I thought, really showed that.
I know. This is another one of IMB stories have great photos. Yeah, these were great photos.
Yeah. Yeah. So the goal of the conference was to give Southern Baptist access to resources to help them learn how to dig deep into the foundations of missions, cross-cultural evangelism, strategy coaching, things like that. So, you know, it looked to me like there was a lot of role-playing where they would give you a scenario and then help you think through if you're leading a team or going on a mission trip to that area, how do you engage in that particular cultural setting? So,
And how do you move your church further down the road toward missions engagement?
Yeah.
Whether it's planning more trips or engaging with missionaries, things like that.
Yeah. So very, very helpful. All right. So this next section, I think, Laura, is called the Seminary Trustee Meeting Update section.
Well, it's mid-April, so that's
right.
it's just that time where the trustee meetings are happening at the seminaries.
Right. Yep,
so we had we've had three so
three.
Far this week.
Mm-hmm.
We had Southern, Southwestern, and Midwestern. I think Gateway is happening this week, so we'll probably be doing
next
that
week
story soon.
Next week. Yeah, we are well aware as executive committee staff members of that meeting at Gateway. It carries some importance for us.
Because Dr. Orge, needs to be there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He's retiring so that he can come over here and start his retirement job.
That's right.
Right? Okay.
And we're so thankful. Yeah.
We are. Absolutely. Well, Laura, let's start in Louisville at Southern Seminary. The seminary trustees adopted a $53.4 million operating budget for the 24-25 academic year. That's a 2.36 increase over last year. They also elected Keith Daniels from the Dallas, Texas area to serve as the chairman of trustees there, also extending the call to Bill Soans as first vice chair, Bill Behrens as second vice chair, Bruce Cheshire as secretary, and Jeremy Roden as financial board chairman. The board there elected four faculty members, including Dustin Bruce as the associate professor of Christian theology and church history, Matthew Haste as associate professor of biblical spirituality and biblical counseling, Andrew Walker as associate professor of Christian ethics and public theology, and Matthew Westernholm as professor of church music and worship. They granted sabbatical leaves for Stephen Wellum, Sean Wright, Jim Hamilton, and Andrew Walker. So some highlights there from the Southern Seminary trustee meeting. How about down in Texas?
Yes. Well, so Southwestern. I bet they have Piggly Wigglies in Texas.
All over, I bet.
Yeah, probably. So the Southwestern trustees also met and approved a $35.6 million budget, which was down slightly from last year. But I was really encouraged by this Southwestern trustee story because, as you know, they have had a rough few years and even were dinged a little bit with their accreditor,
Right.
just knowing that they had to kind of clean house a little bit and get things in order. And it looks like they are just on the road to doing that. I thought the story was really encouraging
Yeah.
and also just really transparent. It
Absolutely.
kind of gets down to, it doesn't shy away from the things that they still need to do. It just says that they're maybe not where they need to be, but here's the things
Yeah.
that we've put in
Moving
place,
forward.
the improvements that we've made. So David Dockery says that the seminary is very hopeful about ongoing giving from their donors, and that their operational budget is in a good place and is more than $1.5 million ahead of the same time last year. And he said no one would have imagined that a year ago. And so that was just very encouraging. He also increased they also increased their enrollment by a little bit, and so it's growing in that way as well. And so some a little bit of housekeeping there. They promoted Madison Grace to professor of theology, Dean Sieberhagen to professor of missions, Michael Wilkinson to professor of theology, and Joshua Williams to professor of Old Testament. And then Amy Kreider, who's the associate professor of foundations of education, and Jonathan Okanaga, assistant professor of biblical counseling, were also elected to the faculty. So they also are adding some faculty down there. And then another interesting note, they named O.S. Hawkins as chancellor and also senior professor of pastoral ministry and evangelism. And I just thought, how fun that after all this time, he's back in the classroom, it looks
Yeah,
like. So
absolutely.
that'll be
Elected
a
him
fun
to the,
class.
and he holds the chair of fire now.
Yeah,
So,
elected him to the
yeah.
Scarborough Chair of Fire, which was just kind of, I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
You thought he was retiring from Guidestone a few
There you
years ago,
go.
but no, here he
There's another. That's right.
no, here he is doing his thing. So
Yep,
wonder if he'll
absolutely.
have some classes that we can audit or something. That would be fun.
Also, Laura, there at Southwestern, Jonathan Richard, Robert Brown, and Angela Duncan were all reelected to their offices to serve another 1 year term. One other piece of information from Fort Worth, Laura, is that Carl Bradford was appointed the dean of the Texas Baptist College.
Yeah, so I remember when he was named the chair of the Malcolm R. and Melba McDowell Chair of Evangelism there. And now he's actually been appointed dean of Texas Baptist College, which is the undergraduate school there in Fort Worth there at the at Southwestern. So it was he was the interim associate dean of the Roy Fish School of Evangelism. And he's been teaching at Southwestern since 2018. He's a native of New Orleans. He has an MDiv and a PhD from Southwestern, so he's been there a while. And so that was just fun news to see him taking over the role of dean there at Texas Baptist College.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, now on to Midwestern and out at the Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Some big news there, Laura, on their faculty as Dr. Donald Whitney joins, actually rejoins that staff.
Yes, here's another one that you think he's reaching retirement age, maybe, and he's just served Southern Baptist for so long, and but no, he's not done. So yeah, this was really surprising to me when I saw this news just today, because we're re recording this the day that this news came in, that he is moving from Southern out to Midwestern, back where he was, like you said, for years. He was
Yeah,
there
he was there
before,
for a decade.
and he's going to establish a new Center for Biblical Spirituality at Midwestern. And those of you that have been in Southern Baptist churches for any length of time have probably done a Don Whitney study of some kind, or a book study, just so many resources for discipleship and spiritual living, and just very well respected. So that was exciting news, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. They also had a rededication of the Spurgeon Library. And so, Laura, I was thinking back last fall when we had Dr. Allen on, and he talked to us about the just the wonderful gift of resources that they had received, you know, from Spurgeon's ministry there in London. I mean, just a unprecedented gift that the seminary had been given to watch over and to protect those resources. So encouraging that those things are now beginning to come out and be placed on display and will be just a blessing to students and to those who visit the Spurgeon Library there.
Which hopefully will be me at some point, because I
Absolutely.
really want to go there.
Yeah. And so, Laura, we've mentioned Dr. Whitney. They also approved Travis Montgomery as assistant professor of Christian studies. And then they reelected Alan Branch as professor of ethics, Michael McMullen as professor of church history, and Rustin Umstead, associate professor of theology and ministry.
And they passed a budget, since we mentioned the budget of the other two, I want to get this in here
Absolutely.
Too, of $35.3 million, which is a 6% increase over last year. So pretty encouraging there too.
Yeah. Thanks for catching that. I had all caps about the Spurgeon Library. Mm-hmm. Don't miss it right there. And so
that's a big one.
I was pretty excited about that. So, all right. This week too, there was some work done in Dallas related to the ARITF. And Laura, the folks there leading the Abuse Reform Implementation Task Force met with leaders from across state conventions. Mm-hmm. And I think there was lots of roundtable discussion that happened there and mm-hmm. what's happening in the states and comparing notes and strategies and just encouragement along those lines. But task force members also shared with those state leaders some specific goals, Laura, that they've been working toward this past year, wanting to bring to Southern Baptist in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. I got to speak yesterday with Kelly Lammers, who is on the ARITF,
mm-hmm.
and which she's a friend of the pod, by the way, as Amy and Jonathan say. She told me she listens to.
I think that's the first time we've actually had the opportunity to say that.
I know. I was pretty excited.
Yep.
So Kelly, hello, if you're out there listening. she said that there were three goals that the task force really focused on because, you know, it's such a huge, you can't even get your arms around the task of trying to deal with sexual abuse in any organization, but especially an organization that's where all the churches are autonomous and everything like the SBC. And so they thought, well, realistically, what are three things that we could actually accomplish? And so these are the kind of the three main things they've been working on the past year. And that is a database of convicted abusers. And to put that online at some point. And she said they're close to being able to do that. A sexual abuse and care curriculum
uh-huh.
for churches, which they've already introduced. Maybe uh-huh. back in February, you'll remember even at the EC meeting in February, they introduced that curriculum. And she talked to me a little bit more about that on the phone when I was talking to her. It's really amazing, that curriculum. Uh-huh. Very excited to see it in Indianapolis in June. I think churches will find it extremely helpful
uh-huh.
and practical. And then the third thing is finding a permanent home for abuse reform in the SBC. And that is also kind of still underway. They're trying to figure out the best course of action for that. But Kelly Lammers told me that, you know, she's a therapist herself, and she said that she's just learned so much. Her eyes have just been opened in the past year serving on the task force, just to how much she said almost that she learned that the Southern Baptist Convention isn't immune to these kind of issues, you know, that people just don't think about it. But she said, I've had to do research and see evil is everywhere. And even in my own church, she is a member of a small church in Northeast Arkansas, just a rural church. She said, even in my own church, I've had to go and say, listen, we have to take steps. We have to get ready because it could happen anywhere. And even if it doesn't happen here, chances are that there are people here who have dealt with it, who have been victimized and maybe would need care in that way. And so this curriculum also, I think, will be very helpful to churches like hers. She even said it was written kind of with churches like mine
Absolutely.
In mind, because we don't have a lot of staff. We sometimes the pastor is even bivocational. You don't even have one full-time staff person. But this curriculum gives very specific advice. Like, these are the steps you take if this happens, even like a flow chart. Like, if this happens, you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this. So just real practical, real helpful. And she also said that the meeting was very productive. Right about half of the state Baptist conventions were able to send a representative there, which I thought was very encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was just a great day. A lot of good ideas were shared, a great spirit in the room. And everybody feels like they're just on the same page. So we'll see. I'm excited to see what happens in Indy.
Okay. Speaking of Indy, the 2024 annual meetings just around the corner. Here we are in April.
We are within 2 months.
I
thought of that a couple of days ago, and I thought, oh my goodness, I am not ready.
Yeah, that's okay. You got a little bit more time. We're working hard. So
I know.
We're getting there. So far, there are around 4,200 folks who have pre-registered for that meeting. And let's see, that pre-registration number harbingers 10 to 12,000 messengers. That's kind of the, you know, Jonathan really looks at those numbers and has developed, I don't know if it's just his instinct or just what, but I tell you what, over the last three years or so, he's been right on it.
Yeah. Yeah. He nails it. Yeah. So yeah, he says that number 4,200 pre-registrants, which it's probably higher than that. Cause that number's a few
That's
days
right.
old.
It's a few
now.
Days old.
Yeah. So it looks, we're looking at about 10 to 12,000 messengers. Yeah. And the last time we were in Indianapolis in 2008, there were 7,277 messengers. So we're looking at about a 50% increase over the last time we were in Indy. So just another example of we're trending up these annual meetings. It's just people are engaged and excited and want to be a part of what's going on. And if you want to have an influence, that's what you got to do. You got to be in the room to vote.
You got to be in the room to vote. That's right. And if you want to serve, Laura, the other part of this little blurb is about the Road to Indy video series that Jonathan does. And this week's was on crossover. And
that's right.
Yeah, just really encouraging about what's going on to prep and be a part of that. I know I got a text from someone who's looking to serve at crossover and trying to figure out some accommodation details, things like that, some logistics. So I know folks are thinking about it, making plans and getting plugged in. And so watching the Road to Indy from this past week with who is his guest, Laura?
Roger Kenyon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is the pastor there, but also he's the sort of the crossover point person for this year in Indy. And I thought it was his testimony was really neat. And he came to Indy in 04 when the annual meeting was there and fell in love with the city and got such a burden for Indianapolis, ended up moving there and has been there 20 years, like planted his life in Indianapolis. And so he talks about that on in the video interview with Jonathan. And I thought that was really interesting. And then he just talks about ways that people can come early, come on Friday so that you can get out in the city on Saturday. And it's such a shot in the arm for the local churches too, when they have Southern Baptists from around the country coming to help them throw a block party or throw a backyard Bible club or do door-to-door witnessing in their neighborhood or whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
It's just, it's encouraging for the churches. It's encouraging for the people who help. And it's a signature of Southern Baptist when we go to a host city.
Yeah, yeah, very good, very good. All right, well, we're coming to our history moment here, Laura. So we are in the home stretch. So what do you have for us this week?
Well, I had a lot of good ones, but I picked this one. It's not necessarily like happy, but I think it's interesting, and also it was significant and encouraging to me. So I'll just read it to you. This is from April 14th, 1967.
Okay.
Okay. So my parents hadn't even gotten married yet. This
Mine neither.
Just a few months before. Yeah. So this was a long time ago. Southern Baptists canceled participation in a South African revival crusade because the government of South Africa refused to allow an integrated party of evangelists to enter the country. And so this is when South Africa is in the throes of apartheid. And there was this crusade that was being thrown, and the organizers of the crusade had asked some of the people at what was then the Home Mission Board, now it's our North American Mission Board, had asked some leaders there to put together a roster of preachers. And so they had done so, but of course, many of those were African American pastors who were going to go to preach at this crusade. And they found out kind of right before they were scheduled to go that they wouldn't be allowed to enter the country altogether as an integrated group. And so C.E. Autry, who was the director of the Home Mission Board's Division of Evangelism, said this would be embarrassing both to the white and Negro pastors. And there were other stipulations that we feel we could not comply with and remain true to our Southern Baptist convictions in the preaching of the whole gospel of Jesus Christ.
Wow.
And so they declined the invitation. And I just thought, what a boy, 1967, 68, 69, what a tumultuous time in our country. And I'm sure even that decision was probably not universally popular in the SBC even back then, but it was just an encouraging and maybe courageous stand that we took back then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there this coming week, Lord willing, there's going to be a summit, they call it the Cooperative Program Summit, where leaders from across the states and the entities come together and talk about ways to share the vision of the cooperative program, to encourage people to lean in and participate. And so I'm excited about being a part of that. And I've been thinking a lot about it. And where my mind has gone is just to be reminded of how the cooperative program is more than dollars. It's about our partnership. It's about being together for the gospel, but being for one another as we do that work of the ministry together. And I think about that in this story, how we stand together. We stand with one another. We stand for one another. And, you know, I think that that's it's something that I need to be reminded of. It's something that all of us need to be reminded of as we serve together on this mission that Christ has given us to take the gospel.
Yeah. Every year at the annual meeting, I think about it too, because our team that comes to help us cover it is from all the different entities, state papers, send people, state publications, send communications people to come and help us write stories, help us take photos, help us edit, help us do all the things. Mm-hmm. And it's a picture of the cooperative program every year. And it's always just encouraging and poignant to you're right. It's a lot more than just dollars.
That's right. Together we can do so much more. So very, very encouraging. Well, thank you, Laura. You can check that Piggly Wiggly shopping list now, I guess, and head off on your way if you need to.
Yeah, I don't have one anywhere near me anymore. I used to shop at a Piggly Wiggly all the time back when there was one in East Nashville and I lived over there, but
I don't
live there now
and
it closed. It's actually a chocolate factory now where that Piggly Wiggly used to be. Yeah.
Okay. That's a whole nother conversation. Oh, you're going to have to get us out of here after that one.
Okay. Well, that was all we had time to cover today. But as always, there's lots more at BaptistPress.com. Thank you for listening.